Welcome to a special live hour-long call-in edition of Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight, the status of marriage. Huge changes for same-sex couples brought about by the U.S. Supreme Court rulings in the Proposition 8 and Defense of Marriage Act cases. It was apparent in the celebration on Castro Street that now that it will be possible again soon in California, that many folks have the itch to get hitched. But should you? Arm yourself with knowledge on tonight's Out in the Bay. Even with the Supreme Court's historic rulings, how are same-sex couples still legally different from hetero couples? And what are the next political steps? In the next hour, we'll have some expert analysis and advice on what the rulings mean, politically and practically. You can call in to ask these experts. We'll start taking calls in about 10 minutes. I'm going to give the call-in number now and again a little later. It's 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Our expert guests include Marriage Equality USA Legal Director John Lewis and Media Director Stuart Gaffney. John and Stuart, together for 26 years, were one of the plaintiff couples in the 2008 California Supreme Court marriage cases that established the freedom to marry in California before voters passed Proposition 8. And they were one of the 18,000 same-sex couples who married in California in that brief window between the state court ruling and Prop 8's passage. John co-authored one of the amicus briefs in the cases the United States Supreme Court decided yesterday. And they're sharing a microphone tonight in our full studio since they are married. So welcome, Stuart and John.
Thanks so much for having us.
Great to be here.
Activist, estate, and trust lawyer Deb Kinney is a partner at DLK Law Group in San Francisco, where she advises clients on trusts, estate planning, and real estate. She also serves on the board of Horizons Foundation, which funds many Bay Area LGBT nonprofits, and previously served on the board of Equality California, the state's largest LGBT political organization. DLK Law Group actually joined an amicus brief advising the Supreme Court on the detrimental business effects of DOMA for the court's consideration in its deliberations this spring. Welcome, Deb.
Thanks, Eric. It's great to be here.
And financial planner Dennis Nix, whose clientele is largely LGBT. One of his taglines is, because our finances aren't straightforward. I think they'll be a bit more straightforward after this week's DOMA ruling, but that's my guess, and we'll have Dennis weigh in on that and more this evening. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, thanks to all of you for being here, making yourselves available to answer listener questions on the air tonight. So first, let's just go over the basics of what the High Court ruled, now that we've had a couple of full business days to digest these decisions. First, the DOMA case. The High Court didn't toss it out entirely, but pretty much gutted it. So what are the key provisions the justices, or is there just one key provision the justices ruled unconstitutional? Who wants to take that? Deb or John?
Well, I'll just take it just very briefly as an overview. The High Court invalidated Section 3 of DOMA, which denies legally married same-sex couples, there are over 100,000 in the United States and the 13 states in the District of Columbia that have the freedom to marry. So it invalidated the provision of DOMA that excludes those couples from over 1,000 very important rights and protections under federal law that every other married couple has. And the case was a really profound case, and a lot of the language it has, and serves as a powerful precedent going forward.
So basically, this is a provision of DOMA that says the federal government would not recognize same-sex marriages performed in states.
Exactly.
Okay. And so what's left of DOMA? Are there important parts left?
Yeah, the other provision of DOMA that remains is the provision relating to whether a state that does not yet have the freedom to marry has to recognize the marriage of a same-sex couple who got married in a state with the freedom to marry. And that's a provision that, of course, is, if you will, the next step to be challenged.
Yeah, so let's get into that a little bit more now. How are those next step challenges going to come to that part?
Well, something that's really important about the Windsor decision, the DOMA decision, is the language it uses. And it really talks about how this federal law that was designed to injure loving, committed, same-sex couples who are married, how it demeans our lives as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people. And it really talks also about how the states that have adopted the freedom to marry have done so in language that we've never seen before from the Supreme Court. It talks about how these couples should be able to have pride in themselves about who they are and live in a state of equality and dignity. So this sort of language is very important language that serves as precedent as a future case will come along challenging other aspects of discrimination against same-sex couples.
Great. Thanks for that explanation. Now, on Proposition 8, the High Court didn't directly consider its legality, but said the proponents of Proposition 8, which banned same-sex marriage in California, had no legal right, didn't have standing to take it to the Supreme Court after the state of California stopped defending Proposition 8. So the Supreme Court said the lower court ruling, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal here in San Francisco, invalidating Proposition 8 holds, and that's the end of it. And marriages will probably resume in California sometime in late July or early August, exact date to be determined. Is that essentially accurate?
Yeah, and just to clarify, Eric, too, what the court decided was that the Prop 8 proponents didn't have the standing to appeal. And so what it leaves standing is actually the 136-page district court opinion that invalidates Proposition 8 that has extensive findings of fact about how this is real harm to loving committed same-sex couples. And the district court had a two-week trial where it heard actual evidence about the harms that Proposition 8 causes lesbian and gay, bisexual, transgender couples.
Okay. So does it, and briefly, let's get into the standing thing. The opponents of same-sex marriages who took the case to the U.S. Supreme Court after California dropped it had no standing, meaning they couldn't show that they had to show that they had been harmed somehow. Is that the legal standard?
Yeah, you know, one of the basic facts of the freedom to marry movement is that allowing loving, committed same-sex couples to be able to marry is of enormous benefit to our lives and to our friends and family, while it has absolutely no effect on anybody else's marriage or anybody else, really. Their lives go on just as before. A fundamental tenet of jurisdiction in the federal courts is in order to continue a lawsuit, continue an appeal that the Prop 8 backers tried to do, you actually have to be personally injured in some way. You have to be hurt. Just because you don't like something or have a different opinion of it, you can't continue a federal lawsuit. What the Supreme Court said yesterday was that, yes, the backers of Proposition 8, they're suffering no injury from loving, committed same-sex couples being able to marry. And therefore, they don't have jurisdiction under federal law. The appeal is dismissed. The district court order invalidating Proposition 8 is the law of the case. And therefore, marriages should be able to begin in California in approximately 1 month.
So does it disappoint you at all? I mean, there's been a little bit of talk that the High Court could possibly have ruled on the constitutionality of Proposition 8 itself. Does it disappoint you, anybody, that they didn't go that far?
Well, let me just say one thing, and then I very much want to let others on the panel share, too. But I think two things that we really need to understand is, one is that every lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender American should have the freedom to marry right now in every state in this country and have full federal recognition of their marriage. That is just, you know, is a given. But that's not where we are yet. And we have a conservative Supreme Court in general. It was 5 of the 9 justices were appointed by conservative Republican presidents. So in that context, the Windsor decision, especially on DOMA with this, you know, really very powerful language about the effect on the dignity of lesbian and gay people that marriage discrimination has, it's a powerful precedent, and it's something that we will move forward with, absolutely.
Okay, I want to just take a little slight detour here. We have Mona Wong, the executive director of Asian Pacific Islanders Equality Northern California, on the line. She can only be here for a few minutes. But Mona, you're there?
Yep, I'm here.
Great. So I specifically wanted to ask you, you'd sent something out yesterday about the immigration implications for binational couples within the with this ruling that striking down this key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so at API Equality Northern California, one of the things that we're most excited about is that striking down Section 3 of DOMA means that there's just one less barrier for binational same-sex couples to stay together in the U.S. So I'm sure a lot of people have already heard about this, but, you know, yesterday there was a couple in New York City. They were in court to petition for a green card just hours after the Supreme Court rulings, And it was because DOMA was overturned that the judge halted their deportation proceedings. So what that means is now they're allowed to pursue their green card case. So this just goes to show, you know, that these rulings are already making an impact on people's lives. And for a lot of couples in the U.S., it's really going to pave the way for a long-term solution for the threat of separation that, you know, up until yesterday, so many couples faced. And what this means for us in states where same-sex marriage is legal is that our marriages will be recognized by the federal government, and it'll enable folks to attain permanent legal status as a married spouse. So we're really happy about that. You know, we know it's not the perfect solution because you do have to get married in a state where same-sex marriage is legal in order to receive the federal benefits, in order to lobby for a visa or green card for your non-American same-sex partner.
Right. And, you know, so interesting. I just actually, you know, one of my Facebook friends, a close friend, but no, seriously, somebody I've never met, but they're a Facebook friend. And they live in California, but they rushed to New York to get married after the decision so that they wouldn't have to wait another month to marry here in California so they could stay together, because I think one of them faced a threat of deportation, you know, rather quickly. So it seems like there's some real motivation for some binational couples to just get married immediately, even if it means going to another state to do so.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many couples that have been waiting for a year, you know, decades, and you know, this is another reason that we're so happy about Prop 8, you know, putting us on a path to restoring marriage in California. But I totally understand why someone would just leave the state and find somewhere else and get married so that they can just get their show on the road. So we're really celebrating that.
Mona, I know you have to get back to something else pretty quickly, but is there anything else you wanted to add about how these two rulings are affecting especially the groups you serve with the Asian Pacific Islanders?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're just thinking about the 66,000 API, LGBT API folks, and, you know, the 35% of LGBT adults who are API, who are documented, and then there's just so many more, you know. The way we see it, LGBT people and LGBT API people and other people of color in particular have such a hard time dealing with cultural and social barriers already, that the fewer legal barriers there are, the better. So we're so happy to be celebrating with everyone this weekend at Pride, too.
Mona Wong, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Have a good evening. You're listening to Out in the Bay, Gay Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. We just heard from Mona Wong, Executive Director of API Equality Northern California. My guests in studio are estate and trust lawyer Deb Kinney, financial planner Dennis Nix, and Marriage Equality USA's legal director John Lewis and media director Stuart Gaffney. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's historic decisions yesterday supporting the rights of same-sex couples to marry and to get federal benefits once they are legally married in the 13 states that now allow it. Tonight, we're taking your calls. It's a great opportunity to ask these experts your questions. What do you want to know? With this new approval from the highest court of the land, are you now itching to get hitched? Has it inspired you? Is your lover now pressuring you to get married? Mm-hmm. What about politics? Do you fear a backlash? It seems in the past it's often been two steps forward, one step back. Our number to call in and join the conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. That's definitely the preferred way to do it. You could post a comment on our Facebook page. I believe our producer, Nora, has taken a look at it from time to time. But we'd love to have you on the air. Our call-in number is 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. So let's get a few more details on DOMA. Tell us a little bit about plaintiff Edith Windsor and why she lifted this, why she filed this suit against the U.S. government. I mean, I know a little bit about it. Yeah, the tax stuff. Deb and Dennis can certainly talk to the tax implications here. She brought this suit based on tax consequences she suffered. Tell us about it.
So Edie Windsor had been married to her partner, Thea, for, only since 2005, I believe, but they'd been together about 40 years. And when her partner passed away, her estate owed an estate tax. And Edie, in her very gutsy, very compelling way, said, you know what, I don't think that's fair because we were married. Mm-hmm. So she went and filed a claim for a refund of $363,000. And, you know, they had been married, and and she had every right to do that. It was an amazingly quick decision on behalf of the Second Circuit, Second District, when they actually heard it and made it ready to go up to the Supreme Court. And it was a single issue case, which I think is one of the reasons that they took the case. There's other cases that were sitting there, but they didn't take those cases. And the Supreme Court ruled that they affirmed the fact that, you know, her marriage was valid, mostly by letting that decision stand. And basically, she should be receiving a refund check of $363,000.
Yeah, so she's pretty happy. And we have a cut from her actually playing from yesterday's news. So this is Plaintiff Edith Windsor.
If Thea was Theo, I would not have had to pay that. Now, that's just a terrible injustice, and I don't expect that from my country. If I had to survive Thea, what a glorious way to do it. And she would be so pleased. Thank you all.
Yeah, so that's Edith Windsor, plaintiff in that case. You know, some people say that, oh, you know, this is rich people's problems. We had billionaire Charles Merrill on out in the Bay a few years ago. That's, you know, Charles Merrill of that Merrill family, the Merrill Lynch company family, who was also fighting the IRS over unfair treatment. If he and his male partner could have legally married, his taxes would have been much less. Now, I don't think Edith Windsor is as wealthy as Charles Merrill. I don't know. But you know, Dennis Nix, are these tax consequences here just rich people's problems or—
No, absolutely not, Eric.
The problem that Merrill had was the same problem that Windsor had, is that when you predecease your spouse, you can leave everything to your spouse and not pay any taxes on it. You can't do that if you're a same-sex couple until yesterday or whenever it actually starts. But for the things that we don't have, we didn't have until yesterday, were Social Security benefits. I have couples who are in retirement, and they could have done some very nice Social Security planning if they were actually a husband and wife. I think of my mom, who's receiving a military pension because my dad was in the military. Same-sex couples didn't have that right. Military housing. A lot of benefits come with being a military spouse. And then, of course, there's the tax implications. There is a marriage penalty. And the last few years, California registered domestic partners and married same-sex couples have been able to avoid it. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a surprise on that end when some people do their taxes this year.
They'll actually end up paying a little bit more, you're
saying?
They
may pay more this year.
Yeah, so they maybe want to get divorced and think about things again.
Right. And the other thing, again, when we're talking about people dying, is your IRA and other qualified plans like IRA and 401k. I have a client, his partner died, he needs to start taking money out of his IRA. If you're married, it just rolls into your partner's IRA. You can use it and pay taxes when you're ready.
No sweat, no fuss.
Yeah, it's very, and as the things we've done, people, you know, Deb and accountants to kind of jury-rig the system to make people look like they've been married. And it's been changing every few years. 2 years ago, we were able to file as community property, and that started something. And we had registered domestic partners, and that meant one thing, and then it meant something else. And, you know, we had domestic partners. The other nice thing that people know most in California is that they have to pay taxes on their partner's benefits at work, which now that's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So healthcare benefits, people have seen that. They get taxed on it every paycheck they see it. So
I want to go to our first caller, David from San Jose. Welcome to Out in the Bay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you taking my call. And just had a couple questions for the panel. The first one was related to the challenge to expand the decision across the entire United States. Just wanted to find out what the panelists thought how that would challenge would take place and how the committee could win in that regard. And I guess the second question I had was more on the basis of the decision itself. I know that I have some friends I talked to this about in general. They said that, of course, this opens up the right for you know, gay and lesbian and the entire community to go ahead and get married. which is fantastic. What is the opinion of the panel? Should that decision extend to perhaps a relationship where you have cohabitation with more than two or three people? I would be interested to hear that and how a court could decide in that area. I'll take your answers offline. Thank you,
David. Thanks for your call. Who wants to go first? Well, this people sometimes bring this up like, oh, this is a red herring question. Like, you know, it's the slippery slope. If, you know, pretty soon we're going to want to marry animals. But I think there is some legitimacy to say that there are relationships
triads,
which could be triads,
right?
or more
of
people.
Course,
I mean, that happens. That's real in the world. And,
you know,
is that a reality that at some point we may have to think about that being a legal possibility? And how do you deal with that?
Well, just a couple things,
John.
Responding to both the questions of the caller, and thank you so much for the questions. One is that I think we're going to see a lot of movement really on all fronts. Something that we hadn't mentioned before is it's hard to underestimate the importance of California, the most populous state in the nation. A diverse, if you will, microcosm of the nation itself now having the freedom to marry. And really, even in the collective imagination of our country, California is the place that so many of us have gone to, you know, to realize our hopes and dreams for our lives. And now that includes the freedom to marry. So I think what we're going to see is states like Illinois and New Jersey, both there are court cases pending and there's legislative action. And I think this is a tremendous boost to those efforts. There are two cases out of Nevada and one out of Hawaii that are now pending before the Ninth Circuit, challenging the marriage discrimination in those cases where there are civil unions in place in those states. So that litigation is going to pursue. I think what we need to do probably before this court is actually going to issue the really big decision, you know, nationwide, is that we need to build more states. We have 13 now, but looking at it realistically, when the court overturned the laws that criminalized the physical expression of lesbian and gay people's love for each other, half the states had gotten rid of them already. When interracial couples were no longer denied the freedom to marry, two-thirds of the states had gotten rid of it already. Ooh. So that is our work to have more states gaining the freedom to marry. And just really quickly on the other point about marriages for or the rights for more than just a couple, in terms of law, what is established very firmly in United States Supreme Court precedent is that a couple has a fundamental right under the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution to marry, a fundamental freedom to marry. And so the next step, if you will, is to say yes, that applies to all Americans without exception, including lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people. So that is what clearly, just by a matter of what the Constitution has been interpreted to say, is the next step.
Mm-hmm. So the lower court ruling in the Proposition 8 case, that was based on the federal Equal Protection Clause, right? So does
Absolutely.
That mean because that ruling stands, that's going to affect – well, that's why you're saying that other states have to come forward there has to be some more momentum building.
And it's just a it's an excellent district court opinion, but it's a district court opinion. So it doesn't have the precedential effect of a federal circuit court opinion or, of course, the United States Supreme Court. And that's why it's a huge step forward for California now to have the freedom to marry. But we need to build in the other states.
So how many states within this ninth district – allow marriage at this point, same-sex marriage?
Well, it's in the Ninth Circuit, which is the western states.
Right.
And there is Washington and now California are the two states.
And New Mexico has an AG opinion that actually says that they'll recognize marriages from out of state even though they won't perform them.
Okay. And wasn't that something that was supposed to be, you know, the U.S. Constitution, full faith and credit clause, wasn't that supposed to do that way back when?
Well, that's a good point, and that's hopefully what we'll get rather sooner rather than later. But that's what I think you're talking about. And we've got other states that we're going to have to look at as well and build that momentum. And hopefully when we get to the tipping point, then we'll get that full faith and credit. You know, and it makes a lot of sense. We're a very mobile society. We move for jobs. We move for family. We move for opportunities. And we need to know that when we move, we're still as protected as when we left.
You're listening to Out on the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are estate and trust lawyer Deb Kinney, financial planner Dennis Nix, and Marriage Equality USA's legal director John Lewis and media director Stuart Gaffney. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decisions yesterday, and we're taking your calls. It's a great opportunity. There's some lines open to ask these experts your questions. What do you want to know? The phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You know, Dennis, a minute ago you said something about this, you know, how in the past you've had to, you know, jury-rig things to find ways to define, make couples look as much as they can look as married as possible without actually legally being married in order to make financial things work for them. And I'm wondering now, so do these decisions, are they going to cut into your business at all? Because now it's going to be easier for you.
No, I also have married couples who as clients and they need financial advice. What I'm recommending all my clients to do is that once the dust settles, we're going to sit down and look at the decisions we made, considering that people weren't married at one point and then they kind of were, and figure out what we need to do. Things like changing beneficiaries and looking at that. I have some clients, we have them own life insurance on each other so we could do avoidance of estate taxes. How we're looking at planning for their retirement, the ones close to retirement now, we can really basically, like straight people have been doing, you know, use the Social Security system. And I know a lot of people think it won't be there for them. And but for people in my generation, the boom generation, we're going to get Social Security probably. And it's a lot of us, and you're asking about people being rich. Is it a rich problem? A lot of us are going to live on Social Security only. And it's very nice if you have a partner and your partner dies and you didn't work and stayed home and raised the child, that you can now get survivor benefits. Or if you get divorced and you're together for 10 years, so this is something we're going to see, you can get, and that partner had, the deceased partner had higher benefits, you can take that partner's benefits. So we're going to be looking at a lot of things that we did to go back and see what makes sense now. And I think, you know, people like Deb and other people who've worked in the gay and lesbian community on these issues, we know how to do that, and we're constantly talking to each other and thinking about ways. So we know how to be very mobile and fluid in making changes every time the law changes. So we're going to be really ready for that.
And I think, Dennis, you touched on a couple of really important points. So, you know, the Social Security survivor benefits, if anybody has lost a spouse in the last couple of years, they should be filing a claim if they haven't already. To preserve their rights, and you can file for up to 2 years after someone passes. So, you know, don't wait for the 25 days. Go down to Social Security and file your claim now. It's not going to be processed for the next month, but you don't want to lose that opportunity.
So, could you explain that a little bit more? What is it? What's happening with the Social Security thing? You used to not be able to get benefits, but now you can. So, how does one go about doing that?
Well, you have to call and make an appointment with the Social Security office and go down. And historically, for the last few years, we've been having our clients do that anyway if their spouse has passed away and file a claim, knowing in the past that it would be automatically denied. But what that did was that kept the claim open.
Right, I see. So the time thing was there.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, as Dennis was saying, you know, Social Security survivor benefits can be extremely important to someone's financial stability.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that anybody who knows somebody who may have lost a legally wedded spouse, and arguably even a registered domestic partner, given the way that the law is written, it should be if someone could have been an intestate heir, meaning that they would have taken under the law, which in California covers domestic partners as well, they should be filing for their Social Security survivor benefits.
So speaking of retroactive things, I did hear a spokesperson for HRC on the news yesterday saying that, well, a lot of people may be wanting to amend their tax returns for the past 3 years because you can go back that far because there's some retroactivity effectiveness in the DOMA being outlawed. Is that right?
It's not necessarily about retroactivity in this as much as it's probably about the fact that when you file your income tax return, it's open as a matter of law for 3 years. So if your tax filing is still an open filing based upon when you filed it originally, yes, you can go back and amend it. A lot of people think that if they go back and amend, because they were married in California, for instance, in the last few years, and they've been splitting their incomes on their individual returns, and it's been very convoluted and complicated, that they'd actually get a refund, when in fact the opposite is true for most people, that filing on one return as married filing joint will in fact raise our taxes. We're going to be paying the same amount of taxes as our next-door neighbors now, but we're also going to be getting all of the benefits.
Right.
So, you know, there's a couple of things. A lot of people are coming in and saying, well, oh, should we get married or what does this mean? And my accountant says, and, you know, I want to pay all of the respect that is due all of the tax preparers that have been suffering through tax returns with registered domestic partners and married couples for the last 3 years. But I often advise my clients that they probably shouldn't ask their accountant for love advice. And, you know, getting married is a lot more than about what do you pay in income taxes. There's so many protections that come with it. Uh-huh. And, you know, and I've done analysis with clients who will actually want to deconstruct marriage to, you know, what does it mean in the way of legal and financial rights? And in fact, they would gain nothing but the opportunity to pay higher taxes by getting married. And that's only because we still have registered domestic partnership status in California. And, you know, what I say is that, you know, don't let the tail wag the dog. You know, you have to look at the totality of it. And what does it mean to you? For most people, I find that it's a very emotional decision. And most people, and I'd say most, greater than 50%, are going to get married because they can, and mm-hmm. because they've always wanted to, and they've never had that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm curious, though. I mean, seriously, when I was in the Castor last night, there was this definite mood in the air, and you'd be like, let's get married, and they're singing, we're going to chapel, and we're going to get married, and you can get sort of caught up in that, like, oh, let's do it because, you know, the time is now, and the politics are right, and, you know, and like, Fred Hertz has been a guest on our show many times before, and he and his partner have been together for a long time. I don't know exactly, maybe as long as John and Stuart, maybe longer, 20-some years, but they have chosen not to be married for, I don't know, for whatever reasons, probably personal reasons and perhaps some financial reasons. But I guess I'm just saying, like, what, you know, what are you sensing that there's maybe some people may be getting a little carried away and like, okay, let's just slow down here and assess the situation?
It's a big commitment. You have to love the person you're going to marry because it's the real deal. And, you know, with marriage and all the rights come all the responsibilities. And, you know, we all have friends and parents and cousins and aunts and uncles whose marriages haven't worked out. And we've seen what it means to go through a divorce. And that's going to become a reality for us, too. We get the good and the bad. And at least we have that choice now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were all out there celebrating in the Castro, too, and the atmosphere was absolutely electric. But I think it's because of the feeling that we have now of full citizenship and the advancement in equality across California and nationwide. I don't know anybody who's going into what I would think of as a shotgun wedding. Now, first of all, we have this mandatory waiting period based on the delay in a Supreme Court decision being implemented. But I have to say, I think our community takes marriage more seriously at this point than the nation at large, having worked and continuing to work so hard for it. We understand this institution and its implications, financial and emotional, inside and out. I don't know anyone who's gotten married capriciously. I think we are really thinking about it very seriously, both what it means for our relationships and for our community.
So we're not taking it for granted, perhaps as much as we might 20 years from now.
Right. I think having worked so hard for it, I think we feel like we've earned it.
Okay. Fair enough. You are listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Stuart Gaffney and John Lewis from Marriage Equality USA, Deb Kinney, a lawyer, state and trust lawyer, and Dennis Nix, financial planner. And we are here to take your calls. So This Way Out will be back next week at its usual time. The phone number here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Ask these experts some questions. As Dennis told me to tell you earlier, you know, any advice they might give you is not specific advice, but you can learn a lot. So call and ask those questions. 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for you to call, I want to play a cut from, this is a an interview that I conducted actually in 2006, a little part of an interview I conducted in 2006 with Phyllis Lyon and the late Del Martin, who, as you probably all know, were the first couple to be, the first same-sex couple to be married in 2004 by Gavin Newsom, and then again in 2008. And in this little section here, they're talking about, actually, it was straight people back in the 1960s and 70s who were trying to say, hey, you know, we're going to try to help you get married and have this equality thing. Here's what their take on that was 7 years ago.
In 1970, the Chronicle had an editorial in which it said that or suggested that the state legislature pass a law allowing same-sex marriage.
And John Burton,
yeah,
at some point brought up, when he was in the legislature, brought up a bill. The thing was that none of us were interested in getting married at that point. The community was more interested in laws that would keep us from being fired from our jobs or thrown out of our houses or thrown in jail and stuff like that. And all this time, none of us were very interested. A lot of us were feeling that marriage was an old kind of silly thing. And it was patriarchal, and it was men getting power over women, and we didn't want to have anything to do with it.
There are still
people like
who feel that it's sort of a cop out to, you know, we don't need to buy into the assimilationist, exactly.
And, but on the other hand, without being able to get married, we didn't have all the rights and privileges and responsibilities that heterosexuals had. And that made us second-class citizens.
So that was Del Martin, the late Del Martin, and Phyllis Lyon from a 2006 interview. You know, and there are a lot of people who still have that feeling that, you know, there are other more important things to be working on. So I want to, you know, housing protections and, you know, anti-gay violence. Are there, I guess I want to ask, like, how do you see this new legal approval of marriage advancing our rights in other areas, advancing our rights across the board?
I might begin with just a couple thoughts. Since we are involved with the California Supreme Court case as well, and it parallels the United States Supreme Court case, in the Windsor case, the Supreme Court decided chose not to decide this issue. But in that case, our community asked, and the Obama administration specifically asked, that sexual orientation be considered a protected class under the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution. And the California Supreme Court decided as a matter of state law in the marriage case that any law that affects a lesbian or gay person differently from everybody else in the state of California is subject to the highest degree of constitutional scrutiny, and that lesbian and gay people are a protected class, just like racial minorities and other minority groups. And that decision, which still holds today and which we want to establish nationwide as well, is something that affects LGBT people in all aspects of our lives. And marriage is just one example of it. And it's an example of how the principle of basic equality and not having second-class citizenship, as Dell, I think, mentioned in the clip, how that's a basic principle that applies to employment, it applies to education, it applies to any aspect of LGBT people's lives.
And I think it also really adds a sense of legitimacy that is irreplaceable in any other way to have the laws of the state apply to you 100%. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about the definition of out and proud. And, you know, when you walk down the street and you can be out and proud, but now when you walk down the street, it's different. You know, you're equal with every other person that you pass on the street. When you look them in the eye, you're not of a second-class status. You're not lesser than in any way, whether it's in your own heart, by your government, or by your society, the people you work with, the boards you sit on. I mean, everything else. It's just it's an equal playing field. And I think that actually in itself is going to bubble up in ways that we can't even expect to give us the kind of protection that we want in each of our societies.
And as Del and Phyllis mentioned, and you've mentioned before during this conversation, the number of rights, 1,000 plus, I think 1,138 is the number I've seen somewhere. Is that the right number?
That's the right number.
So just you know, obviously we can't list every single one, but what are the general, what are the big ones that, you know, besides the right to be married, for example?
So that's a great question. And you know, what I like to tell people is that you could live an entire lifetime and try and take advantage of all 1,138 rights, but you're never going to get there in one lifetime.
Okay.
But, you know, for a lot of people, there are a handful of rights that are completely intrinsic to their safety or to their ability to participate in the world. And, you know, we've mentioned some of them tonight. We talked about immigration. We've talked about taxation. And, you know, in California, for instance, we have a community property state here, and we get some very big benefits for the community property that we acquire together. You know, when your partner passes away, that entire asset, even if it's jointly owned, gets a new step up in basis. So, you know, if mom and dad historically owned a house and they paid $100,000 for it, and it's now worth $1 million, when dad passed away, both halves got stepped up to $1 million. So if mom needs to go sell it, there's no gain, no tax. Now, in the past, if my partner and I had done that and I passed away, my half would get stepped up to 500.
Right.
Her basis stays at 50. There's a 450,000 taxable gain. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
The other thing is divorce. Divorce has been, you know, separation. It's been a taxable event. And very expensive for same-sex couples who are splitting assets, whether or not they were legally related or not. And, you know, laws were meant to protect us. They were meant to protect us at birth, you know, getting married, when we have children, at our divorce, and at our death. And, you know, in theory, we have a very solid set of laws for those to afford us those protections. And we get to take advantage of those laws now.
Dennis, you wanted to talk about registered domestic partners. And so some people are choosing to do that and some are choosing to get married. What's the difference and what are the important things to consider there?
Well, now with DOMA, it goes back to the issue we were talking about with taxation, with filing your tax returns. And I don't really know what the decision's going to actually be on that. But up until DOMA, it was very clear if you were an RDP or married same-sex couple in California, you took your income and you were able to split it. And that was a very advantageous thing, especially for people who had disparates, had different incomes. And now with marriage, you're going to put that together and you're going to pay a marriage penalty tax. So there may be a reason if people who are RDPs to maybe stay RDPs, and it may be a financial decision. And, of course, it goes back to what Deb is saying, you know, you want the RDP means nothing once you leave California. So you do want this equal, you know, maybe a personal thing that you want to be called marriage. But it may, from a taxation point of view, cost you money. But right. Then you're also going to be losing some other benefits that marriage brings.
Well, so a few years ago, can't remember whose bill this was, registered domestic partnership changed so that it had the same effect as marriage, at least within the state of California.
Right.
So it kind of upped the ante and all the responsibilities and that came
right,
along with it within California.
Divorced.
Right. And that's when the automatic divorce thing came up and the community property kicked in for RDPs. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying, but someone can still remain a registered domestic partner in California and not be married at the federal level, and that may save them money
at least
the
on the
level.
Income tax
at least on
yeah but then you have
but I mean yeah, and that's true. And you know, I know that we're in Northern California, but if you live in a different state, you don't get the community property
right.
split on your taxes. So for people in New York, for instance, with disparate incomes, they'll pay less tax by doing married filing joint.
Right.
And so it just depends on the state in which you're filing taxes. And then, you know, to stay RDPs, you know, for a lot of people, that might be enough. But if you have if you want to access any of the big federal benefits, it's probably not going to get you there. There's a lot of talk in the community about whether registered domestic partners should have all the same rights as married people because of the law to which you're referring, which says that, you know, it's supposed to be equal under the state law. But I don't really think that it's going to get there. I don't expect the federal government to give registered domestic partners the chance to do married filing joint. The government and our codes and even all of the different agencies that give us benefits like HHS and, you know, INS and immigrant, I mean, all of those other federal benefits we're talking about are all based on marriage. And every law that we know about is based on marriage. There's no law that I know at the federal level that's based on registered domestic partners.
So So do you think that should the state government take away the RDP status? I mean, because I mean, not immediately, but at some point. But I mean, didn't it all come about because
we
couldn't
get
married?
All shaking our head, no.
Well, and you have to remember, you know, if you're married, I mean, look at Stuart and John. They're married here. They can travel to 12 other states now and D.C., or they can go to 3 Indian nations. And their marriage will be respected. So they would have the ability to be treated as spouses in those particular jurisdictions.
Right.
Now, if they're also registered domestic partners, they can go to another 6, I think, states that either have domestic partnership or civil unions that don't recognize their marriage, that would, in fact, recognize their domestic partnership or their civil union.
So there's still confusion. You still do have a job.
But until we have it across every single state and until it's the same playing field, I don't even think we should talk about taking away registered domestic partnership status.
Yeah, yeah.
So can you be an RDP and married?
As long as it's to the same person.
Okay.
That would be interesting. Well, that's how you get the triads. You could be RDP with one person and married to the other person.
No, neither law will allow you to do that. Sorry. It's creative, but it's
check.
Not going to work.
Okay, darn. All right. You know, okay, we got a few minutes left. You still can call and ask questions, folks. 415-841-4134. Did that get a little thick there? If you're confused, call. These people know. 415-841-4134. So I just want to I'm curious to know, so politically, what are the next steps? What are the political next steps, John and Stuart?
Well, the political next steps, I think, are continuing full forward on all fronts. You know, we were very close to passing the marriage equality bill in Illinois just a few weeks ago. And I am very hopeful that these Supreme Court decisions are going to be the boost that puts the pressure on that one or two extra legislators to get that passed. And that's going to be a huge victory to have marriage equality in Illinois. In New Jersey, we're working to override Governor Christie's veto of a marriage equality bill there. And so there's going to be a big push there. This is giving energy to states. And I think people are trying to be very wise about it as well and not going too fast and get too excited. But other states, such as Oregon, are looking to reverse constitutional amendments that were passed really just a few years ago. Right. But when we look at actually, I think the vote in Oregon was, I believe, 56-44. That was in 2006, I might want to say. But that's like light years away now. So it is, I don't know, it's just really inspiring to see how quickly some of the perspective has changed. So I think, again, all fronts is what the mission is right now.
And simultaneously, people may be doubling their efforts to pass employment non-discrimination, transgender rights, and all the other rights that we want in addition to marriage. The excitement coming out of the marriage decisions and the momentum from winning now 7 states in less than half a year is really going to propel us forward in towards full equality nationwide.
You know, and can I add something?
Please.
Because I would really like to appeal to all of the listeners and all of their friends to realize that we're in a very privileged position here in California.
Absolutely.
And the job is not done. And just because we have full marriage rights with federal recognition at this point, that actually, I think, gives us a greater responsibility to stay engaged and to get the job done. You know,
absolutely.
Chuck Wolf said from the Victory Fund, he said, this is not a time that you let up. This is a time you double down and get the job done. And that means that we still continue to fund the organizations that are doing the fight, that we do phone banks when we have different kinds of ballot initiatives that will inevitably come up, that we contact our legislators, and that we don't become assimilated to the point of non-participation. Mm-hmm. And because we're so lucky, we just really need to, you know, it's a payback time, if anything else.
And one quick thing, too, and we keep telling the truth of our lives and our personal stories to all our friends and relatives across this country in the next states that we need to make progress in.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's no one that wants to ride an elevator with John or Stuart or me at this point.
So John and Stuart, your organization, Marriage Equality USA, you're based here, but you do work all across the country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're based both in California and New York.
Okay.
But all across the country, yes.
So since you talked about personal stories, how has this affected you personally, any of you? I mean, like your mood, your actual relationship?
Well, first of all, I think we're all experiencing absolute joy from yesterday, and it was interesting to hear you say two full business days have now passed since these decisions came down. It feels like we've barely taken a breath. I know that John and I have barely slept
since you were busy.
These decisions came down. It's intellectually, I know it to be true, but emotionally, it really hasn't fully sunk in the beauty and the importance of the wins in both of these cases. So I think that we're celebrating, you know, these decisions come down right before Pride, and then we're rolling our sleeves back up and getting back to work.
Yeah. Want to take one more caller while we still have time. Mark in San Francisco, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Hi. So I had a question. One of the issues that I heard about before this ruling was that there was a risk that corporations might stop offering domestic partner benefits once marriage equality was offered. Have you heard anything about that?
Great question, Mark. Thank you for calling. Deb?
Yeah, I'd be happy to take that. I actually don't see that happening right now. If anything, I see corporate America finally coming to the plate and supporting us in ways that even in 2008, we couldn't get them to do. We saw that in Washington. We saw that in the amicus briefs. We've seen it in the international kind of coalitions that are coming together. And I really don't see that as an issue until, potentially, we do have marriage equality in all 50 states.
Right. Okay. So I think that's what kind of the question was sort of like mine. I don't think Mark's there still. Are you there still, Mark?
Yes, I am. Sorry if I asked a question that's already been answered.
No, no, not really, because I think I sort of asked about whether the state would want to do away with it, because now that we can get married, why should we have domestic partnership? Because that's what it was created for in the first place, because we couldn't get married. So is that what you're saying, like corporations are sort of taking that same strategy, or you wondered if they might?
Yeah, because, for example, my company offers domestic partner benefits, and they also compensate domestic partners for the unfortunate tax consequences of tax on the benefits. We get extra benefit. They compensate us back for that. Now that this has been approved, I'm wondering if they're going to rethink that.
Because they're going to say, basically, well, you can get married. So you get married now so that we don't have to pay the money out of pocket to make a difference.
We don't have to compensate you for the injustice of the federal tax liability on the benefits.
Okay. Do you want to say what company you work for?
I could.
You don't have to. It's up to you.
Yeah,
do you think they're listening? I'm sorry, say it again.
I work for the Federal Reserve Bank.
Okay. All right.
And they've been very good about offering domestic partner benefits, and they just started this year compensating employees for the tax consequences of offering benefits.
Okay.
That's great.
Thank you. Any other comments on that?
Well, I think companies that have employees in multiple states will continue to do the right thing. But it may be that in states where there's a choice, they may actually potentially not. I could see them not grossing up at some point, but I can't see them taking away the right to health care benefits for domestic partners.
Mark, thank you very much for your call. So this is another question I wondered about. You said that, you know, we are living, as you said, Deb, in this kind of bubble here in the San Francisco Bay Area and in other parts of California, perhaps, too. Do you think we face any sort of fear about backlash? What do we need to be careful for in the rest of the country where other perhaps more conservative states or more conservative counties within California are saying like, well, you know, this is, you know, the voters, the will of the voters wasn't upheld. And how should we prepare for a possible conservative backlash?
Well, I thought it was really interesting last night because the opponents of marriage equality were actually coming out as though they had won the case. And at this point...
That's a spin. How did they do that?
You know, that was such a spin. And it's really feeling like a last gasp. Not that we can let up, because they are going to continue to fight for a while. And I think we can expect that. But, you know, if you take a look at even what's happening and how many people are finally crossing the aisle, how many Republican senators are starting to sign on... you know, the coalition is being built around fairness and equality. And this is actually an issue that I think is becoming less divided on political lines. It's becoming less divided on age. We still do have some issues with religiosity, But even that, we're seeing a lot of people. And as you said, if you tell your stories and if you ask for support, and it's a big thing, you have to go out and ask for support, not just tell your stories. You know, in 2008, 70% of the people who voted yes on 8 actually knew someone who was LGBT. And that's when we learned that it takes more than just knowing someone. It's telling your story and asking for their support. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get there. And sometimes it's going to be one conversation at a time.
And something I'm really encouraged about, too, is how I think our allies and our friends are coming to own this issue of not just marriage equality, but full equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people as their own. And I was just so moved at about 7:30 yesterday morning. Stuart's 89-year-old straight father sent an email to the entire family, the cousins, everybody, the entire extended family. And it didn't say like Stuart and John, you know, had a great victory, you know, yesterday. It said, we won.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I just, again, it's so moving to have that sort of support in your family. We don't take it for granted. But it was that ownership that we all are off, all better off when we all are treated with equality and dignity in this country.
Thanks. Yeah. Anything else anybody wants to add? We've got just a couple minutes left.
Well, you were talking about how this has changed. It's interesting. I've had not life partners, but three people I've been with, and none of them were born in the U.S. And if you want to feel like a second-class citizen, my last partner was Canadian, is go through immigration with them when you come back through from another country. And, you know, you stand there at the line and it's like, you know, you go into a different line.
Right.
Each of you. And you're no one to that person. So if they take them, you know, my fear was always that they would take him into one of those little rooms that they take people in and send them back or something. And I'd say, you know, can I see him? And it's like, who the hell are you?
Right.
And it's
right.
like, well, or nobody, yeah, basically.
Right.
And, you know, so when you think about things like that and how often that happens, I had a friend who has an Israeli boyfriend and they want to get married, and he was just sent back. He came over and they sent him right back. He was in Newark Airport, 20 miles from where his partner lived. And, you know, that can't happen anymore. So, you know, and that's a really, you know, when you see things like that, and it's so, you know, painful in a way, and it's like, what the hell is going on? And, you know, a lot of times I didn't even, you know, until this marriage thing came up, I really, you know, in the last 10 years, I've been in San Francisco fighting for things. We fought for, you know, getting domestic partners benefits in 1989, I'm talking about. And, you know, and didn't realize what rights we didn't have until we started really, it's like, oh, that's right, you can do that. You know, so it's kind of amazing. Anyhow.
So thank goodness we've had some big changes this week. I want to thank all three of you for being here. My guests have been Dennis Nix, financial planner you just heard from, Deb Kinney, a state and trust lawyer, Deb Kinney, and Stuart Gaffney and John Lewis from Marriage Equality USA. Could you all please give information websites where they can find more information about you?
MarriageEquality.org.
MarriageEquality.org.
www.nixcity.com.
NixCity.com.
DLKLawGroup.com.
DLKLawGroup.com. Thank you so much for all being here. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. If you missed part of this broadcast, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outinthebay.org. We can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app that lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. You can also hear our most recent shows right on the site and about a dozen of our past favorites. We've been producing Out in the Bay for more than 8 years. And we'd love your financial support. It's easy and tax-deductible on our website, outinthebay.org. There are ways you can help us that don't involve your money. That's right, we could use your help and expertise in many other ways. There's info at the bottom of our donate page and on our homepage, outinthebay.org. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime, tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr, and thanks to Nora Elmaligi for production help tonight. Out in the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS or by phone at 415-989-1616. Out in the Bay is also supported in part by the San Francisco Frontrunners 34th Annual Pride Run. It's coming up this Saturday, June 29th. It's co-sponsored by local dentist Peter Farmer and by Wells Fargo financial advisor Dan Jorenstead and by financial planner Dennis Nix. The Pride Run's fun, not competitive, and a healthy start to the weekend. That's to find info, go to sfpriderun.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. Write to us, Eric@outofthebay.com and Marilyn@outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.